You thought you knew, but you have no idea. It's the Urban Sports Scene.
Okay, we're back on. It's the Urban Sports Scene on the Eyes Radio Network.
What's going on, Wally? How you doing, man?
I'm fine, sir. Everything's been good. But it's been about, 2 weeks now?
We took off last week.
Okay. We did the week before last.
Yeah, we did the week before last, but we took off last week. So, yeah.
Okay.
Took a week.
Took a break. We're refreshed. A lot of things happened in sports, but I didn't formally introduce the group or the two-man team.
The duo.
Wally Will said it, and I just said your name anyway, so it defeats the purpose.
Exactly. So
yeah. So we already did everything. Let's get into it. Let me give you all some little Eyes Radio info.
You're such a company man.
I am. I'm a sellout. Is that what you trying to call
I'm
me?
Call you a sellout.
I'm a man of the
you're
people.
Such a company man.
I try to share the information out there for the people, man.
Spreading knowledge to the world.
Exactly. And also, I look out for the other podcast shows on the Eyes Radio Network.
I respect that.
Well, I try to put it that way.
Well, anyway. Go ahead, get into it, man.
All right. Well, like I said, I mentioned the Eyes Radio Network, and you can check out some of the podcasts I'm about to mention on the website, which is www.eyesradio.com. Eyes is spelled EYES radio.com. You got Backfield Radio, which is a podcast on the Eyes Radio Network. A show that's not on the Eyes Radio Network, Eyes Radio Network is Clutch Sports Radio, which is produced by our good friend Darwin. It's www.darwin-sports.com. And also check out our homies, Voice of the Fan. They're also not on the Eyes Radio Network, but they have a show similar to ours. It's www.blogtalkradio.com/The Voice of the Fan. And also check out our show, which is syndicated on the internet radio station Real People Real Talk Radio. This site is managed by our good friends from Apple G's. Make sure you visit the site. It's www.realpeoplerealtalk.com. Love you, Viv. What's up with you, Coach?
What's going on, folks? Let's get into our tradition of pregame.
All right, Will T's the big boxing fight. I saw it. He saw the big fight. It was a fight everybody was talking about. Mayweather, Canelo Alvarez. Mayweather dominated the fight, which was a surprise to me. But, Will, I'll let you start off first.
No surprise here. The only surprise to me was the judge, C.J. Ross.
Man, 114?
114.
What was he smoking?
No, she. What was she smoking?
Oh, she? It was a lady?
It was a lady. Okay. What was she smoking? She's actually one of the people who actually, was the judge for the Tim Bradley Manny Pacquiao fight, and she had it for Tim Bradley. So we know exactly that she doesn't exactly
watch
the fights. I'm not gonna say she doesn't know boxing. She doesn't watch the fights.
So you're too nice. You're a nice guy. I'll be the mean guy, which is kind of funny and ironic if you think about it. No one ever thinks of me as a mean person, but be honest with you, she don't know nothing. Like, to say it's 114-114, and I went into the fight rooting for Canelo, but I mean, when I see something, it is what it is. You have a 114-114. No, you got a personal problem. Sorry.
She does. To me, to be completely be quite frank with you, you could have judged it 12-0 for Mayweather.
Seriously, total it was blowout. That bad. It was that bad.
Just out of sympathy, I think I gave Alvarez 2 rounds,
mm-hmm.
which would have made it like 118-112, if I'm not mistaken. But yeah, it was a masterful performance by Floyd Mayweather. Very dominant from the outset. One thing that he did in this fight, opposed to his other fights, I think he did press for the knockout. And you could tell from the way he started out the fight in round one.
So you thought he did press for the knockout?
I think he did press for the knockout from the beginning of the fight. From the beginning of the fight, he tried to assert himself more than he does in his previous fights. In his previous fights, we all know that Floyd Mayweather kind of fails people out the first 1 or 2 rounds. This fight, he came out strong. He came out aggressive, using the jab, trying to set up the right hook, and just, you know, dominating. And he completely dominated Alvarez, which was no surprise to me. A lot of people actually thought it was going to be a close fight. And the way they marketed, you thought it would have been a close fight. But we all know that Floyd Mayweather is probably... Not probably. He is the greatest boxer of our generation. I'm not going to go of all time, but of our generation. This generation right here, he's the greatest boxer. From a defensive wizardry standpoint, probably the best. Only thing that he's lacking is that one-punch knockout power, which a lot of people get very overhyped for fights. But you have to understand that It's called boxing. It's called the sweet science for a reason. You hit and you don't get hit. And that's exactly what he did. A masterful performance. A lot of people want to say, oh, he ran. No, he didn't run. He stood right in front of him. He continued to use the jab and use that left hook and the right hook and use the uppercuts to totally annihilate Alvarez. And, you know, and Alvarez, it shouldn't be any shame because he's only 23 years old, very young fighter. Has an extremely bright future. He is the future of boxing,
yeah.
From a marketing standpoint. But this fight probably did huge numbers. You know, I talked to a lot of people. Everyone said they were either going to a fight party or they were going to buy the fight on their own.
Yeah, Alvarez shouldn't, you know, feel any which way about taking the L to Floyd Mayweather Jr. He's young. He's probably the face of boxing. I told a friend of mine who wasn't really familiar with Canelo Alvarez. I was like, don't let this fight make you think any different of Canelo. He's still a bad man. Canelo Alvarez is still a bad man. There's not a lot of people in this game that can see him. Obviously, Mayweather is the top of his game, which I was, you know, it was different. I don't think, how I've viewed the fight, didn't think that Mayweather was going for the knockout per se, but I just thought he was just showing him that he's just outclassing him. And it wasn't running away. He showed he got his angles. He hit him. I think he was smart enough to know. He was smart. To me, he knew once Canelo lost a little luster in his punches because, you know, Canelo's punches didn't have the same umph anymore. He didn't decide, okay, I'm going to even try my hand even more. I felt it's not running to me. It wasn't running. He found his angles. Mayweather would be dumb to get in a brawling battle with Canelo Alvarez. He'd be dumb, especially with a guy who's supposed to be a light heavyweight anyway. So, I mean, to me, Mayweather did a job. He took angles. He stayed in front of him. He used his great defensive skills. He rolled his shoulders. He did everything Mayweather would do. When he even got stuck in the corner, he got out of it. It's like he was smart enough and he frustrated Canelo because Canelo couldn't hit him. That's the thing that, you know, you could tell that Canelo got frustrated little by little. And you could see this, you know, when Mayweather tried to tap gloves with him, he was pissed off at him. Mayweather played mind games with him. Mayweather was just a vet. It's like the master seeing his pupil. It's like, come on, try me, you know, try me, but you're going to fail. You know what I mean? How I looked at it was like Mayweather just showed his skill. His experience in the game and just being a flat out better boxer.
You did make a very interesting talking point. That was to what you alluded to about Alvarez. You said that you had a friend who didn't know a lot about Alvarez and thought that he was a total bum.
Yeah.
And to the general public, they may think that just because of the way Mayweather dominated and blew him out. But I want to let anyone who listens to the show who's not a boxer fan or is misinformed about boxing, Alvarez is essentially the future of boxing. He's not a subpar, built-up type of fighter. He's not. You know, he's very young, very strong, very aggressive. He's going to be around for a long time, and he's going to have a lot of huge fights. And, you know, this one bump in the road shouldn't be something that kind of – I hope that doesn't define his career from here on out.
Real quick, what did this fight do for Mayweather's legacy? Go ahead.
I think this fight, this gives him that nanny boo-boo that everyone's talked, you know, for everyone who's been a critic of his. Everyone said he never fought a young, in his prime fighter, and he did. He fought the guy who's arguably one of the top five fighters in boxing and the guy who's at his peak. He did it. He went out and he totally dominated him. So anyone who's ever questioned Floyd Mayweather, his talent or his ability to handpick his opponents, shut up.
Yeah, I agree. I even put this on Facebook and someone told me, like, you doubted it? Like, yeah, I doubted it. I mean, it's just natural. If someone's fighting, if you see the guys on his resume, they weren't in their prime. But obviously, I've always appreciated his skill. His boxing skill was, to me, still proven to be one of the best boxers of all time, skill-wise. But in terms, if we're looking at that signature W, that real signature W, to me, this is it. Because he's beaten a guy in his prime. Like, not a guy like Oscar De La Hoya. I know it's a good name. Miguel Cotto, it's a good name. Some of these guys he's beaten have great names. But at the same time, this guy's in his prime.
I don't want to stay on the fight for too long. But you're right. You know, this is probably, I'm not going to say the defining fight, but this is the fight that history pundits and the general public will look at. The difference between him and, you know, kind of the all-time greats is, like, let's take a guy like Oscar De La Hoya.
Yeah.
No one can ever question Oscar De La Hoya's selection of opponents, because he fought everyone. He went up from every weight division, and he fought the biggest fighter in those divisions.
Felix Trinidad,
Bernard Hopkins, just to name a few off the top of my head. But
Fernando Vargas. What's the
Shane Mosley, Chavez Sr.
Yeah, all, you name
it. He's fought Pernell Whitaker. He's fought Hall of Famers, so...
Yeah, I agree. So I'm proud of him. I'm happy for Mayweather. I'm a Mayweather fan actually. Certain people I like more or certain people I like more. Like I'm a Pacquiao fan, and Pacquiao has almost the same thing with Mayweather fighting certain people, and he hasn't fought that many people in the prime either.
Yeah, people don't bring that up.
Yeah, it's the truth. They're very Manny similar Pacquiao. In that regard in terms of their opponents.
They fought a lot of the same opponents.
Exactly.
But from these two, from a legend, let's talk about. An up and comer.
The undercard. Garcia. You're part of the undercard, man. I'm proud of Danny Garcia. A lot of people, I'm a Danny Garcia fan. A lot of folks pretty much gave him no shot to win this fight. They like to reference the look that Danny Garcia had when Matisse
blew through
Lamont Peterson.
Third
round knockout. And people go to that and say, oh, he was scared. He was shook. Did you see Danny Garcia's face? Well, did you see Matisse's face? In that fight, did you see that eye?
Yeah.
Danny Garcia, he's a boxer, man, and people gotta realize that he's a boxer. The kid can box. He's got punching power, and that's a scary thing in boxing. If you can box and have punching power, you are a dangerous man. Now, can he? There's talks about him not being having the opportunity to fight Floyd Mayweather Jr. Floyd would kill him. That's a fact. But I'm just saying, as a boxer and in terms of fighting some of these individuals out there in the game right now, not the best of the best. I'm just talking about some of the other guys that people want to refer to. Yes, this kid can box. This kid is a top-level boxer.
I'll go on to say that I'm one of the people who actually thought Lucas Machine, the Machine Matisse, would win this fight. But as I've always said... I compare Danny Garcia to Evander Holyfield because both fighters aren't great in one thing, but they do everything well.
Exactly.
They're very good boxers. And, anyone who used to watch Evander Holyfield knows that Holyfield wasn't a particularly great knockout power. He wasn't a great defensive fighter. But him and Danny Garcia, they're both guys who have tremendous heart, and they do the same, and they do everything well as a boxer inside the ring. As you alluded to, this is a fight. Danny Garcia, he puts his hat in the Floyd Mayweather sweepstakes. Danny Garcia, unified champion at 140. What'll likely happen is you'll see Danny Garcia come back around January, February of next year at 147. Then he may have, if he wins that fight and looks impressive, he may take another fight in around May, and then he will probably fight Floyd Mayweather in September of 2014, excuse me.
We're talking about this fight. No, it's not probably going to happen, and obviously it'd just be a dream fight, like Andre Ward versus Floyd Mayweather Jr.
It would be a dream bout, but it's not going to happen just because of the weight.
Of course.
It would be a good fight, but this is the thing. Andre Ward, from a drawing perspective,
yeah, it's not there yet.
Doesn't bring anyone to the table. But anyone who's really a fan of boxing knows just how talented this guy is. You can look down his resume. He was in the Super Six. That was on Showtime. He's gone on. He's fought a lot. He's essentially cleaned out 168, and then he beat Chad Dawson, who was the champion at light heavyweight when Chad Dawson came down to 168 to fight him. So he's a guy who has the resume. He just doesn't have that defining fight at this point.
Yeah.
And luckily with a guy like Chavez Jr. potentially going to 168,
yeah,
that's a guy who he can fight, who has a big crowd, and who he can, if he wins and looks good at it, will get additional fans and, will increase his fan base. But that fight will never happen.
Oh, no, yeah, it will never happen. But I always think that people like Floyd Mayweather Jr., if he's going to fight a guy who's with great talent, that automatically, because of Floyd Mayweather Jr., makes the fight big. It's not as if like that guy has to be so popular. He just has to be popular enough to a point where that people recognize that he's a really good boxer.
Yeah, one fight that actually at the middleweight that he could actually do, but the guy's injured, is Sergio Martinez.
Exactly. That's the point
I'm
talking about.
That's a fight that could potentially happen because, you know, Martinez fights in the middleweight division, but he doesn't actually weigh. No. He doesn't actually reach the middleweight weight limit. He's a guy who usually fights at the 158, 150, anywhere between 156 to 158 pound range. So if he could lose a couple of pounds, jump back down to 154, that'd be a dream fight that a lot of people would be interested in seeing. Floyd Mayweather.
Yeah, of course, of course. That's a fight I think a lot of people want to see. But again, to me, it's a fight that people want to see. But I think where Sergio Martinez is at now, that's the fight Floyd would kill. And I think, you know, again, it would go back to my
dominated.
Yeah, it's going back to the whole process of not fighting somebody in his prime. But I'm not using that anymore. You saw what he did to Canelo anyway. Let's go to baseball, local baseball playoff races. Let's go with this. Let's start with the Nats. The Nats right now are four games on the loss side behind the Cincinnati Reds. Can this team catch the Reds?
My heart as a fan tells me yes.
So you a fan of the Nats? I thought you were a fan of the Yankees.
I've always said I'm a Nats and a Yankees fan. So
which one's your real team? Who's your real team? Your real team, your number one.
My number one, I probably go, because they've been around longer, Yankees.
Okay, you're a Yankees fan. You just support the Nats.
I'm a fan of both of them. I go to a number of Nats games. Haven't been to a Yankees game this year. I usually try to go to a Yankees game at least because, you know, we're in D.C., it's in New York. When I go up there to go visit my family. But my heart tells me yes, and a small part of my mind tells me yes, that they could potentially catch the Cincinnati.
Your heart tells you yes, and a small part. So you're basically saying yes, they will catch the Reds.
I'm saying maybe. Maybe with a
I'm gonna need some conviction.
I'm gonna go out on a limb and I'm gonna say yes, they'll catch the Reds.
There you go. See, how you did that. You just made a decision. You weren't flip flopping. You weren't wavering. You said yes, they're gonna make it. They're gonna catch the Reds. They're hell no, they're gonna catch the Reds.
Why not,
man? Well, be honest with you, and not to knock on the Nats. I think I'm amazed they got this far. And they are close. They're in striking range. They can do it. The Reds are playing Pittsburgh. They got to play Pittsburgh. It's tough. But one, they got the series with the Braves right now. I don't see them sweeping the Braves. You know, they took game one of the doubleheader today due to the fact that the tragic stuff that happened over the Navy Yard. And our condolences go out to the families that were involved, their families and loved ones who were missed, who were killed or whatnot or injured for the folks in that tragedy. But they're playing the Braves. So to me, they're going to lose a couple games. They're probably lose one game. I feel like they can't really lose games right now. And then also you got the Reds. To me, it's just a strong team. It's going to be hard for the Reds to go on a losing streak. They're too good of a team. It's not like they're a weak team in some element. Like, for instance, the Reds have offense and they have pitching. They have a good bullpen. So it's hard for the Nats to catch a team like that. Now, if the Reds didn't have offense, or say they had sloppy pitching, then I would say, yeah, I agree that they can catch them because the Nats have good pitching and their offense is now hot. You know, you got Zimmerman now catching fire. Denard Spain, 27-game hitting streak. So they have pieces now and they're hot at the right time. But the Reds are such an all-around good team. It's just hard, in my opinion, it's just hard for the Nats to catch up.
Well, you know, I think
12 games left.
So we'll see. You know that they're down four games
on the loss side.
Four games down on the loss side.
Yeah, the Reds lose tonight. They're definitely
You know, they play. Reds have a 3-game series with Pittsburgh.
Yeah, eventually. Yeah, is it now or I know they have it coming up.
It might be now or coming up. We'll have to check that. But I do think the Nationals can pull it off.
Okay, that's cool. Will says yay. I say nay. All right, let's go. What you want to say? Go say your little saying.
I'm not gonna say.
No, you can say.
Let's go up to 95 to Baltimore.
I really can't stand that saying. the Orioles are 3 games behind the Rays and 2 games behind the Texas Rangers. Who needs to step up for this team to make the postseason?
Everybody. They're not going to make it.
Okay, that's cool. See?
look. Just to give you a hard time.
No, you're not going to bother me because I wrote them off a couple weeks ago. Ask coworkers, dude. I'm not watching Orioles games anymore. They're pissing me off.
No, they need the bat of Chris Davis to step up and come through consistently.
He's doing his job.
They need their young stars to cement their spot on the team as leaders, Chris Davis, Machado,
Adam Jones,
Nick Markakis.
I agree.
They need those four guys to drive this thing home these last 12 games. They need those four guys to drive this thing home so they can make so they can get one of the wild card spots.
Yeah. For me, I mean, I think it's easier. You know, I mean, it's not easy. It's, you know, we can all go on players, but I'm gonna say I'm gonna need Buck to step up and manage it. He did a great job the last two seasons, even though we didn't make the postseason before. Well, you know, he's been a great job in around this time since he's been in Baltimore. You know, his team has been on streaks and things of that sort. But I think Buck has been kind of off this season with his managing skills. I'm gonna need Buck. It's gonna be up to Buck to call the right, make the right moves. You know, right hit the right hit situational hitting moves, like hitting runs or somebody stealing bases, or when someone seems done as a starter, call someone from the bullpen now. Don't wait too long. It's up to Buck to make the right moves for this team to be successful. If Buck can do what he's done the last couple of seasons with the Orioles, I think they'll be fine. I haven't been a fan of how Buck has managed the bullpen this season, but I feel it's up to Buck. If Buck makes the right moves, I think this team has an opportunity to make the postseason. That's going to be hard because they're starting this series today with the Red Sox, and the Red Sox have had the Orioles number this season. So if the Orioles can't, it is a must-win series, to be honest with you. The Orioles can't say, every series is a must-win series. But this series will be telling. Tonight's game will be telling and see if the Orioles can even get a wild card spot.
So pun intended, the buck stops with Buck?
Yeah.
Okay. Just wanted to throw that in. I know that was a corny joke.
Hey, man, you got the juice now.
All right, but from one local team, we'll go to a local basketball player from this area. Mike Beasley has found a home again in South Beach with the two-time defending champion Miami Heat. Speak on it.
I'm happy for Mike. Well, it's always a blessing to play with the best player in the world, especially a player that's not a selfish ball player, a guy who will be willing passer. So, same thing I said about Greg Oden. It's going to go with Mike Beasley. You got an opportunity to get better. Go ahead.
Not to cut you off, but think about that bench. You have Beasley, Oden, and Ray Allen.
Yeah, it's a cheap. You're getting it for cheap. And to be honest with you, if Oden pans out to be what they think, I mean, if Oden looks healthy, Oden will be in the starting lineup regardless.
If
eventually
Oden
down the road,
can give you 50 regular season games and can stay healthy for the playoffs,
yeah,
along with Beasley, even though Beasley isn't the biggest, but he can be physical on the block against a team like
if
Indiana.
If they use him correctly, I agree with you. If they use this has been my problem with Michael Beasley in the NBA, and I don't know if it's him or if it's just the teams that he's been on. You got him from Kansas State to be a power forward. All right, that's what you got. You didn't get him to be a three. You got him to be a power forward. He dominates a power forward. He can use his advantage. There are people, and what annoys me, there are guys his size in the NBA that play power forward. Blake Griffin is about the same size. He's more offensively skilled than Blake Griffin. Now, does he have the desires of Blake Griffin? Probably not. I think Blake Griffin wants it more.
I question Blake Griffin.
Okay, I hear you. But he's a guy, if you put him in that same spot, where you put Blake Griffin in a low block, instead of putting Mike Beasley in on the perimeter, let him go to work. And, you know, this is the telling. And also, to be honest with you, I don't know. Should Chris Bosh be worried that Mike Beasley's on the roster?
No, I don't think he should
be
worried.
Okay, that's what I know.
I think, if anything, the addition of Greg Oden and a Chris Bosh, mm-hmm. and a Mike Beasley mm-hmm. helps Chris Bosh's game.
I think I agree.
Because Bosh doesn't have to play the five anymore. Mm-hmm. And sometimes he doesn't even have to play the four. He could be a stretch three.
But he would have to defend if he's gonna be a stretch three.
Yeah, from
that's a problem though. If he's gonna be a stretch three, well, he can't move his feet laterally against a really.
Well, depending on the defensive scheme in a matchup.
If they're playing the zone, maybe he'll survive.
He could survive. Yeah. But I'm just getting excited because basketball season's close. I know football season just started. We only two games in, but when the basketball and the football and the baseball all comes together, man, it's just the best time for sports during the year.
You didn't mention hockey.
Like I said, when the basketball and the football and the baseball and, you know, we're talking about the World Series pennant and the pennant races, it's the best time for sports of the year.
I'm a fan of what Mike Beasley has to offer this team. I actually mentioned this thing about Mike Beasley on Twitter, but I'm trying to find it. Can't find it now. I'll bring it up probably after the break. But well, you can take us a break, man.
Just one more note. I think this is the best fit for Mike Beasley because you have a strong locker room. You have LeBron James, you have D Wade, you have Ray Allen, you have Pat Riley as the lead, as one of the leaders of the franchise, and you know Eric Spoelstra. He's kind of created his niche in the NBA. You know, as a player's coach and you know a good defensive mind. So I'm excited for Mike Beasley. Best of luck to you in Miami. But when we come back, we'll talk about the local football team. I refuse to call them by their first name.
Washington Redskins, I'll call them.
Because it's racist.
The Redskins. The Washington Redskins. Hail to the Redskins. 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 Mother bleeping Redskins.
All right, we'll be back after break.
It's the Urban Sports Scene on Eyes Radio.
For ages.
Get it.
Deuces.
Blow up last season. Every win. Every loss. Every headline. Blow it all up. 'Cause all that matters is what you do next.
Time I go out, you know I got show out. Hey. Every time I go out, you know I bring the dough out. Yeah. Every time they go out, you know they bring their hoe out. Hey. Every time I go out, you know
this
I bring
the dough. This is Ryan Kerrigan, and you're listening to the Eyes Radio Network.
Now, after Wally's rant off the pale, now that we're back. sometimes you people, I wish we had a microphone, a live microphone, so you could pick up some of the conversations we have off air.
It's some ignorant stuff.
Yeah, it is.
Some
but,
very ignorant stuff, for real.
But anyway, you can listen to our show by visiting our official Urban Sports Scene website at www.walio.podbean.com. Walio is spelled W-A-L-E-O. We're also on iTunes, Twitter, and Facebook. Just search Urban Sports Scene. If you have any questions or comments, just email Wally at urbansports@eyesradio.com. If you can listen to our show on the Sports Grid Podcast Show on Thursday nights, 9 p.m. Eastern Time, just visit www.blogtalkradio.com/WC Stellafan. The show is produced by West Coast Stellafan. For that last show, to be honest with y'all, because of Thursday Night Football, Wally's probably not going to be on that show.
Oh, what are you talking about? I want to watch that Geno Smith game.
No, I'm saying, are you actually going to be on the podcast for the
Oh, it's not Geno Smith. It's the Kansas City Eagles
game. Kansas City, yeah.
No, I'm not going to. That's a good game.
Yeah, it's
going
to be a good game, but
I've been meaning to call too. I need to call in and tell. I'm a tweet West Coast to the fans and tell them I'm still going to try to be on your show, but it won't be. These games are too good. I'm sorry, man. There's some good games. Other than
the first game, Patriots versus.
You like that Jets. Game? I like Geno Smith.
It was an ugly game.
It was ugly.
You know what? I actually thought that the Jets had a chance to win it, but
they
it's
did
just
have
that Geno Smith threw those three late interceptions.
Well, I don't want to blame Geno. You them wide receivers are horrible.
Wide receivers are
they
horrible.
They can't catch.
And also, he has Marty Morningwig as his offensive coordinator.
There you go.
When I was an Eagles fan,
He's a bane of your existence.
Yes. I loathe Marty Morningwig because his inability to create schemes to run the ball. He had the best one. I'm not gonna say the best. He had one of the best running backs in the NFL.
But you don't blame Andy Reid for that? A lot of people blame Andy Reid.
No, not really.
Okay.
I really don't. Because if you think about it, there was a time when Brad Childress was the Eagles' offensive coordinator, and the Eagles ran the ball with regularity.
Okay, I got you.
But anyways, let's talk about that Washington National NFL football
team.
You
can't get what you want to say out. Look at you. Just call them the Washington Redskins. Stop trying to be difficult.
No.
Just
do it. Let's talk about Washington's national football team.
The Washington Redskins. What you want to talk about my Redskins?
Your Redskins lost 38-20. Some would think that's a close score, but
it's
if you watch the game, you would know it was actually a blowout.
Yeah, it was a blowout, man.
Let me get your thoughts on the massacre at Lambeau Field.
You call it it's not called a massacre. It's different. I mean, if it was a massacre, it was an ass whipping.
Guy throws for almost 500 yards. Another guy rushes for 100, almost 120 yards.
Say again.
A guy throws for almost 500 yards.
That's true.
A guy rushes for almost 120 yards.
I don't deny that.
and the game wasn't close
scoreboard-wise
until they went into kind of a soft prevent defense.
If you want to be correct about it, they're putting some backups in.
Excuse me. Thank you for the correction.
Okay.
So I'll call it a massacre, which it was.
I won't do that.
Okay, well, you don't, because you're a fan.
I know, I call it ass whipping. You call it a massacre. I think massacre seems a little
harsh. Hey, listen, I didn't want you to use the dump button, so that's why I didn't call it an ass whooping.
I don't have
to use
that button. That button's ass. You can say ass on TV. Okay. You can say ass on the radio.
Forget it. The ass whooping that
sounds better.
That the Washington
I don't like massacre.
National football team took.
All right,
in Lambeau Field.
Yeah. Well, first off, I'm gonna say this. You know, I love RG3. I want folks to understand this when I say, I love RG3. But I've always said and stated that RG3 shouldn't start this season if he wasn't 110%. Will's heard me say it. I think I've said this on the show. I didn't even say 100%. I said 110%. If he wasn't 110%, he shouldn't be playing. If he wasn't 110% ready mentally, he shouldn't be playing. Now, you can always say this is preseason, but you know, as a competitor and as a guy who plays, I mean, as anybody who plays sports will play sports, period, in any level, you don't want to give up games and say, okay, well, we can throw away these games because it's preseason. Because you know what? That's not fair to the other 52 players playing on that team on game day. So by saying, yeah, this is his preseason, so we got to be patient. I understand we should be patient, but, you know, as a teammate of RG3, I'm thinking to myself, like, well, if you're not ready, you're not ready. You know, you're not, obviously you don't want to say it to him because he's the star of the team, the face of the team, the franchise. And I understand that. The kid's going to get better. I expect him to be right by the mid part of the season, maybe maybe up to week 10, whatever it could be. He'll be right and he'll be ready to go. Would I bench RG3 now? No, because we started this. So now we have to make sure he has to play. I'm not for benching RG3. Never was for benching RG3. I just stated from the get-go, it's not a benching if you just say he's not ready, get him to week 4, then after the bye, he's starting. By that time, he should be comfortable enough to play. Well, comfortable enough, because obviously when you come off an ACL injury, you know, it's mental. And I think, you know, Adrian Peterson effed the game up for real by, you know, playing so early, because, you know, the difference between Adrian Peterson and RG3 and any other player who's ever torn with an ACL is Adrian Peterson wasn't 100% for real, but he was 100% mentally already. And that took him to a whole different level. RG3, if you watched him in that Green Bay, watched him Eagles game and watched him in the Green Bay game, he's not 100% off the bat.
So you're trying to insinuate that RG3 is mentally weak compared to Adrian Peterson.
Yes, compared to Adrian Peterson. And it's not just
wanted to get you on record saying that.
But you know what? Everybody's mentally weak compared to Adrian Peterson. So I'm not criticizing RG3 by saying that. Adrian Peterson might be the strongest willed individual I've ever seen in sports to will himself to a 2,000 yard season. Outcome of an ACL injury, he willed himself to do that. But no one has that will. I've never seen it. But now to the game itself, you know, a lot of people won't get on defense and, you know, and say like, well, the defense sucked. And I always tell them, football is a different sport. It's a different beast. It's not like baseball. Baseball, if your defense sucks, 9 times out of 10, that may not even affect your offense. Your offense, you still may be doing things offensively. But in football, if your offense isn't doing anything, that's putting your defense on the field for a long period of time because your offense can't move the ball. It's not like you're not even sustaining drives. You're going 3 and out. Now the defense is on the field again. Now they're logging minutes. We're not the Chicago 85. We're not the 85 Bears. We're not the Baltimore Ravens of 2000 on the defensive side of the ball. Our defense is, to me, and still in my opinion, is a decent defense if it gets rest. It's not a perfect defense. It's not a great defense, you know. But if it gets rest, it can do some things. That's all I'm saying. It's hard to judge this defense when they're continually on the field every time. If you give Aaron Rodgers multiple opportunities to dissect you, it's going to happen, all right? Without a threat of an offense to put up points or sustain drives, it's going to happen against a tired defense. You saw Philadelphia do it. When the Redskins defense was tired, they started gashing even more plays. Running plays were going crazy. That's why you got like Starks running for 100 yards. That defense on the field too long, so Starks got 100 yards.
Yeah, I mean, you pretty much covered the base on your rant about
about
the team. But no, I'll just say you made a great point about coming back from the ACL injury, and I'm gonna compare RG not gonna even call him RG3. Robert. Adrian Peterson versus a guy in basketball like Derrick Rose, who actually took his time because a lot of people ridiculed Derrick Rose, but Derrick Rose was like, mentally, he's just not there.
He admitted it to himself.
He took a whole season off, and I can guarantee you, he'll be stronger coming back for it this season.
Exactly.
Robert, I don't know who's in his ear or who's in his corner, kind of, or maybe it's himself pushed himself along as aggressively to come back to play game one. But you had to understand that, and the people closest to him should probably understand that the first four games aren't as important as his career.
Mm-hmm.
And from this the standpoint of, you know, you don't know, because he isn't mentally, he seems not ready mentally.
Yeah, to me.
He has all the more chance to re-injure himself or do more harm to himself. You can tell just by the way he's playing, some of the way he's throwing the ball, not stepping up into the pocket, even though they have gotten a tremendous pass rush from the middle that's come through the middle of...
they're showing blitzes all the time through the middle.
Because they know he's having problems stepping up and making the passes.
Exactly.
With that torn ACL. But, you know, just 2 weeks down, we'll see. Maybe after the bye, he'll be back to himself.
Yeah, that's a possibility. So, I mean, you've been watching. I mean, obviously, you can speak as a person. Obviously, you're not biased in the situation. You're not a Redskins fan. You're not an NFC East fan. You're not an Eagles fan. You're a nobody fan.
I'm just
fan.
A fan of football.
You're a fan of football because the Eagles disappointed you with Riley Cooper. is RG3 the problem with the Redskins offense? Is he the problem?
No, absolutely not. He's not the problem with the offense. The problem is that, to me, and I don't know the game plan, I don't know the intricacies, it just seems that the Redskins aren't dancing with the one who brought them to the dance.
Gotcha.
They aren't running
the read option.
And
well, they're not running it the way they used to run it.
They used to run it. It just looks like it's just handed off to Alfred Morris. Even though they may get in the pistol offense and they may show signs that it may be a read option, but it's just hand off to Alfred Morris. So you're taking that element away, the ability for him to run, which made this offense so dangerous last year. And, you know, in the words of Pierre Garçon, that had that opportunity this year to be the greatest offense ever.
Don't be throwing those sly comments.
I'm not throwing any sly comments. That was his comment. He said that had the chance to be the greatest offense ever, right?
It still has an opportunity. Don't do that. It's only 2 games
14,
in the season.
14 games.
Yeah, it's only 2 games. Two games played. We scored 27, and we scored, 20 points second. We still have an opportunity. Don't do that.
Be your optimist. Right.
Still got a chance.
Barry Sanders rushed for 2,000 yards that time. He only ran for 52 yards the first two games of the season.
Exactly. It can happen.
So there's an opportunity.
It's an opportunity. Don't do that again.
It's
going to happen. Don't do that again, son. Don't be that rude.
I'm not being rude.
Don't be that rude.
Not.
Okay,
RG3 isn't the problem with the offense. It's just his inability to use his legs, or the Shanahan's unwillingness to put him in situations to use his legs, is what's.
Why are we blaming the Shanahan's, or could it be RG3 saying that he doesn't?
No, I'm blaming his dad.
Because is RG3 a part of that?
I'm blaming RG2.
RG2?
I'm blaming RG2 because he wants his son to be a drop back quarterback. So you had the opportunity these first 2 weeks to be a drop back quarterback and to kill everybody from the pocket with your arm. And what has happened?
He hasn't been successful.
Exactly. So since you haven't, if I'm the Shanahans and that is the case, I'm saying, okay, we're doing it our way.
I will say this. RG3 has been a great fantasy quarterback. But in real life, he hasn't really been the greatest quarterback. Fantasy football, he's a beast, though. Still putting up good stats in fantasy football. Believe me, I have him as a quarterback. I know. But in terms of the stats he's getting, this is the one thing that's been annoying me as a Redskins fan. You hear fans talking about it, or you hear the media talk about it. You even heard RG3 refer to it, that we got to start fast and play good in the second half. Understand this, please. The Eagles game, they eased up in the second half because they thought they were blowing the game out. They eased up on defense. They didn't blitz as much, and RG3 put up stats. Second, game two, Packers did the same thing, put in reserves, and that's why his stats his stats were better. He threw 3 touchdowns in that game. It's still a problem. The offense is an issue. Do not deny it by saying he's getting stats in the second half. Do not even refer to the second half as something special that's going on, and there's something why we can't start fast. Fact of the matter is that when the games count, when we're in that first half, or whenever the game in the first half, or the first or the second quarter, whatever you want to call it, we're in the game. we're not doing anything offensively. That's the issue. All right. It's not we don't mention stuff that happens when we're getting blown out and we're putting up stats. Okay. Alfred Moore's getting out. We're getting out he's getting out when we're getting blown out. He's not getting out when he didn't get out against Green Bay when we needed him to get out. He got out when we were getting blown out. Okay. I'm cool with Pierre Garçon's stats because I saw a hard working right there. That's a hard work. You know what I mean? And no cornerback wants to be embarrassed by a wide receiver. So I'm cool with Pierre Garçon. But if we're gonna go and talk about the stats of Alfred Morris, who only had two big runs, and that's why his stats came from with two big runs, Alfred Morris and RG3. We are still struggling when defenses are trying 110%. That's when we're struggling, and we need to get that fixed. That's all I want to know. We need to get that fixed when defenses are trying.
Preach.
That's when we need to get
tabernacle.
I'm saying that's when we need to get it. That's when we need to get everything fixed offensively. Not when defenses aren't trying. When defenses are really trying to stop us, that's when we need to start stepping up. So this second half BS that everybody wants to refer to, like, oh man, this offense is showing something in the second half. Dead it, because it's dead to me. I don't want to hear it.
Let the congregation say amen.
Amen. Mm-hmm. I feel like saying like glory. Oh my Lord. You remember Glory? You want to sing? I can just find a clip. We can sing that joint.
We can sing it sometimes.
It's like Negro spirituals, man. We got to bring a Negro spiritual song to the show, man.
Yeah, uplift the spirits of our listeners.
Exactly, man.
All right.
I want a Negro spiritual app.
You should get on that.
I know. I'm working on it.
Do that.
I'm working on it.
It'd be huge during Black History Month.
Yeah, it would. I'll rake up some money. I would exploit black people.
You would.
I'm the worst.
They're already being exploited.
I know. Who you telling? BET, baby.
Okay, but anyways, let's get back to football. Should the Redskins consider benching Robert Griffin III or demoting particular players since they're on a two-game slide?
I don't think they should bench. Well, we already mentioned. I'm not saying benching RG3. I've already stated that. I do think there's some players on this team that should be demoted.
Speak on it. Who?
I think Josh Morgan shouldn't be starting anymore.
I'll go with Hankerson.
He's making plays and he's catching. And it's funny when Josh Morgan drops the pass, people don't talk about it. He dropped one and it was an interception for RG3. But when Hankerson misses one, the whole world ends. Like, Josh Morgan's had so many dumb plays already this season within two games. Not going out of bounds because the Eagles game. When he caught passes, he was going upfield rather than going out of bounds to save time in that two-minute drill. And also, you got him dropping passes against Green Bay. Hankerson, all he does is making plays. I would like to see a guy who's making plays out there paired up beside Pierre Garçon. That at least it's a threat. If you're gonna run two wide receiver offense within the pistol or whatever, make sure it's Leonard Hankerson.
This question is kind of along the lines of kind of potentially demote the player. Where's Fred Davis at?
He's been demoted.
Fred Davis has not made any plays this year. I guess they got upset with him trying to defend himself in that case during the offseason.
No, not at all. Jordan Reed.
Well, yeah, Fred Davis is on a one-year contract.
Unfortunately,
and he's coming off of Achilles injury.
There you go. I mean, he looked good preseason. And honestly, I'm gonna be honest with you, the ineffectiveness of RG3 is like really screwing up a person like Fred Davis. Though he's connecting with Reed, but if RG3 was sharp, he's had Fred Davis open. If Fred Davis can show that if RG3 was hitting Fred Davis. For Davis being in the game, but he's connecting with Jordan Reed. Why is he connecting with Jordan Reed? And maybe a person he was working with while he was sitting on the sideline while Fred Davis was working with the first team.
You made an interesting point, I know you talked about the offense, but I know there's some guys in that back four that you potentially want benched.
Oh, defense. On the back end?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm happy with Merriweather being there back. I mean, he knocked himself out after he knocked out Eddie Lacy.
He plays with reckless abandon.
I'm cool with that. Mind me, Sean Taylor played with reckless abandon too, okay. To a certain extent.
What about a Josh Wilson D'Angelo Hall?
All right, I'm cool with D'Angelo Hall, though I didn't get that stupid, giving out all that cushion when Jordy Nelson scored that touchdown. I'm cool with Hall. I hate Josh Wilson, but
hate's a strong word.
Okay, you know what? I'm sorry. I have a great disdain for Josh Wilson.
That's better.
Okay. Josh Wilson, I mean, I don't respect the chubby cornerback, but he's, wow. he, I mean.
You just want to let that go, will you?
Not really. He's like Khalil Alameen. I keep saying the same
thing. He's the Khalil Alameen, the cornerback.
Yeah, seriously. Hey, Google Khalil Alameen, folks, and you'll know what I'm talking about. UConn. See a picture of him. You'll know exactly what I'm talking about. I mean, really, honestly, with the front four, I wouldn't bench anybody because everybody I want is hurt. So I can't bench you because the folks I want hurt. Like, now we had Richard Crawford, who tore his ACL in the preseason. Yeah, I would get rid of Josh Wilson in a second. I think Richard Crawford is better than Josh Wilson. I like Amerson. I like the rookie. Bakari Rambo can be benched, though. I wish Philip Thomas never
had earned this. Well, this is the thing about Bakari, and I was having this conversation with one of our buddies.
Oh, Harold?
Yeah.
Jiu-Jitsu, what's up, son?
Friend of the show. What's going on, Jiu?
Listen to the show. And you got Jared, too, Ninja.
I think that having Bakari Rambo can work one or two ways for you. Either he'll learn on the job and he'll get better during the season, or he'll be so mentally traumatized from the mistakes that he's making now that he'll continue to do it and be shell-shocked.
Yeah.
But to me, it looks like that he has the potential to get over his problems and, you know, kind of get better as the season progresses.
And what makes you feel that way?
What makes me feel that way is his strong career at Georgia. Okay. And also, if you notice, when he gets burnt, typically he tries the next couple of plays. He typically doesn't make the same mistake. He makes mistakes, but he doesn't make the exact same mistake.
I'm not mad at Bakari Rambo in the Packers game. Because I was more mad at Jim Haslett for a couple of dumb things he did. But I'm not mad at Rambo. I think he would serve well to be benched if he could. But again, there's nobody to bench him for. Reed Dowdy's there, but I wouldn't bench him over Reed Dowdy. I mean, when Merriweather comes back, I liked how the two of them worked together when Merriweather was on the field. Tackling needs to be worked on defensively. That needs to be worked on. I don't
know
what
you
can
do. It's so hard because you can't practice in pads.
Hey, then you know what? You're going to have to take that L. You know what I mean? You're going to take that L and go with the flow. But I posed some things on Twitter, obviously referring to RG3 and the read option, seeing if the Redskins should go back to run the read option, or should they wait a little longer to run it, maybe down week 2, 3, whatever. My man Derek is on Facebook on the Redskins chat room or chat page. It says Die Hard Redskin Family. Derek Mungia said let him play. I'm referring to, I guess that means let him play the read option. Christopher P. Talmadge, I guess I said it right, says think they should fix the defensive side of the ball first. I referred to it earlier. The defense can only do as much. You know, they're on the field all day. It's a problem. My man Steven Danzy said the read option is one of many plays out of the pistol formation. They have been running it. The difference is Robert has not been keeping the football, and Morris isn't getting it either. They have to throw because they're getting behind 20 points or more so early. Go ahead.
Just a thought that came into my head. You know, I apologize for keep cutting you off, but when I have a thought, I just want to kind of
get it out.
Why aren't the Redskins using like the stretch and using the bootleg?
The stretch for Robert, the stretch running play?
Yeah, the stretch running play.
I've seen the stretch been used for Alfred Morris right now. The Eagles getting ran the stretch. He wasn't getting to the sideline quick enough. It was kind of slow. And the Eagles kind of stringed it out. I'll say that for the stretch. I've seen you run the stretch maybe once or twice. I don't understand about the boot though. That's a good one. Well, I don't know about the boot. I don't know why.
I can say potentially why, because you went against 2, 3, 4 teams, and when you run
that's what Shandy said.
You have the linebackers who fill the outside gap. So maybe that's the reason, but why.
But they were running that against 3-4 defenses last season.
They were.
That's the thing that, you know, people have referred to that. Chris Cooley said that, matter of fact, on the Chris Cooley on the radio, the 980 ESPN 980, a local station that covers the Washington Redskins.
Rivals.
Not all rivals, man. Rivals, nothing. But he referred to that. He said it's easy on the 3-4 that linebackers encounter for it, so he can pretty much tee off on the quarterback because he can be free when he boots to his side. But and they're playing Detroit, so the 4-3, it'd be more easier to do it. So I think against Detroit, you may see some boot action. But we'll see, or him being rolled out. I want to refer to this, my man Steven Danzy, real quick. they have been doing. See, the problem is not that, you know, I've said they've been the Pistons, they've done read option, but they're not really doing read option. They're just giving the ball to Alfred Morris. They need to do some real read option. RG3 has to read it and run. That's the problem. That's what he needs to do. He needs to make himself a threat. So, but thanks for all the Facebook responses on Redskin Die Hard. Appreciate it. All
right, but I appreciate it. Let's stop looking through the rearview window and let's look to the future, which is this Sunday, and Detroit comes in to FedEx Field.
Yeah, exactly.
With arguably two of the most dynamic offensive players in the league.
Reggie Bush may not play. He's going to play. He may not. I mean, Reggie Bush may not play, though.
Well, he may play, and if that he knee, does
that
play.
Knee that knee hurts.
If he does play, that does create matchup problems for the Redskins defense. Reggie, and Reggie Megatron.
That's all you had to say. Why are we wasting time, Reggie Bush? To be honest with you, I like Reggie Bush. I mean, I'm liking what he's doing in Detroit. It's good for the offense, but let's be real. All right? When Detroit's coming down, they come down here, there's only one person you're thinking of, all right? It's the dude, like 6'5". He run like a 4'3". And he scares me right now. And, like that's all I'm thinking about right now as a Skins fan. It's like, how is Megatron going to house D'Angelo Hall? Like, how is he going to house him this time? How is he going to do it? Excuse me. Let me use the right term, because this person needs the respect, because this is what everybody says. How is he going to moss D'Angelo Hall? That's all you're going to say. How is he going to moss D'Angelo Hall? I'm thinking to myself, like, we can double team this dude. Would that really work? Like, seriously. I'm dead serious. Like, is it going to really work? I know Megatron thinking to himself, and any fancy user that has Megatron is thinking to themselves, like, damn, they licking their fingers right now. Redskins secondary. Oh, I'm about to go in. It's scary, man. Just be real. It's really scary.
It's going to be an interesting matchup come Sunday. You know, Calvin Johnson's going to show out. He's going to do what he does.
Yeah.
They have Nate Burleson.
I'm not really worried about Nate Burleson.
If Reggie Bush plays, he's definitely a guy you have to factor in.
Any running back, man. Shady McCoy, who's an awesome running back, had like 180 on this.
184.
All right, then you got
James Starks.
Come on now, let's be real. Any running back should be, and that shit. And for real, Bush is dangerous if he plays because he's shifty.
I'm going to tell you the thing you should. If I'm a Redskins fan, this is why I'm extremely scared. And Ndamukong Suh.
What a dirty dude in the play.
I'm not going to say dirty, aggressive play.
He's dirty.
What happens when he beats a double team and comes right up the middle on Robert Griffin III?
He's going to hit him.
He's going to hit him very hard.
He's probably going to hit him low, too. He's
that
probably
going to hit him low. You have a point. He might go low on him. And that could potentially...
He going low on him? That's disgusting. Excuse me.
No homo. He could potentially try to tackle him low and do some damage to that knee. So if I'm a Redskins fan, that's one thing you need to be concerned about. Nick Fairley and Ndamukong Suh.
Yeah, two dirty individuals.
And just the speed on the ends from that Detroit defense.
The rookie, too. The rookie from...
BYU.
BYU, yeah. So he's fast. Athletic. I have a nice athletic front four, which is a 4-3. So I'm interested to see. I mean, I'm hoping that we can man up and survive. I think this is a must win.
I don't think it's a must
win. Oh, it's a must win.
I'm gonna tell you why it's not a must.
Go ahead.
Because you have the Eagles playing Kansas City at home on Thursday, which isn't a guaranteed win for the Eagles. So that could potentially drop the Eagles to 1-2. The Giants are 0-2. And also the Dallas Cowboys don't look that great at 1-1. And Dallas plays a very tough St. Louis Rams team this Sunday. So I don't think it's necessarily a must win. It would be good if you won and got the first win of the season, but I'm not going to go out and jump out there and say a must win at this point.
As a diehard Redskins fan, it's a must win. I don't know what we're talking about.
Just talking about from a statistical point of view.
Good stats, Will. It's a must win. I want to go 0-3. I don't want to. And I want to go show my face to work being 0-3. It's a must win.
Redskins do go 0-3, do you know the talk of this town will be
like bench RG3.
Of this fan
base? Be like bench
RG3. You'll see a revolt against Robert Griffin III if the Redskins go 0-3.
See, I'm going to tell you
no
this.
No more presents for your wedding.
I'm going to say this is what happens to black people. They love you. As soon as you mess up, they hate you.
And on that note,
OJ, they love OJ. They hate him now. That's all I'm saying.
And on that note, we're going to go into commercial break. When we come back, we're going to go
up. Just a joke. I'm kidding.
We're going to go up to 95 and talk about the world champion Baltimore Ravens.
See, they love Ray Lewis now, too. Look at him. Urban Sports Center Eyes Radio.
For ages.
You dig?
Deuces.
Hi, this is Wally Akinso from the Urban Sports Scene. Earlier today, I had a sit-down interview with Jim Gray, which focused on a hard decision that I had to make.
How many people know your decision right now?
In all realness, Jim, that's a dumbass question. I should smack your ass right now.
One hand or two hands?
If you keep playing, I'm gonna smack you with two hands.
When did you decide?
The idea of me smacking you came about 30 seconds ago.
You still a nail biter?
Don't worry about my nails. They won't be in the way when I smack you. Don't worry about it, alright?
We've had everybody else biting their nails, so I guess it's time for them to stop chewing.
Jim, if I was you, I wouldn't worry about everybody else.
The answer to the question everybody wants to know, what's your decision?
I smacked Jim Gray.
That was the conclusion you woke up with this morning.
Yes, Jim, that was the decision that had me tossing and turning this morning. It was hard, but I felt that my left and my right would make an impact on your face. And I was right.
Why?
Why? That's why. You think you know? You have no idea. You don't know the decisions that anybody within the USS has to make.
This is Josh Morgan from the Washington Redskins, and you're listening to Eyes Radio.
You can also listen to us on Sunday nights at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on the Apple G's radio show. Just visit www.blogtalkradio.com/Apple G's. Apple G's is spelled APOGEEZS. The show is hosted by Coach Rodney and a lovely Vivian. What's going on, folks? Hope everything's well with you all.
Hey, what's up, Coach? What's up, Viv? Appreciate the love y'all showed me on Facebook with my niece's picture. Y'all cool with me? Well, y'all need to come down here too, for real, so we can
come
all get up.
Here. Up here.
Oh, up. I'm sorry. I'm using my slang ain't cool enough for you. Y'all need to come up here. According to, well, I apologize for incorrect grammar.
And they come into.
Hey, you know what I mean, but you know what I mean. Why you gotta be all difficult, man?
I
go up 295, down 295. What do you want from me, man?
Listen, man. I try to hold my friends and my loved ones to a high standard.
All right,
so
thanks,
I hold
Will,
you
man.
To a very high
Appreciate
standard.
Appreciate it, man. Low, man. Lower the standard. You see my Redskins down? I'm lowering. I love them. I'm lowering my standard.
That's the problem with the Redskins, and they always.
I'm sorry. I apologize.
They always. Excuse me, Washington's football team.
No, let me apologize. I said it incorrectly because you like to refer to the Ravens as the defending champions. The 1991 world champion Washington Redskins. I can't stand. I love that team, and I always keep. I put them on. I lower my standards for them. So go ahead. Now you can go ahead.
No, I'm just one thing in life. Me personally, I'm a guy who always under promises and over delivers.
I got you.
And the Washington Redskins, they always seem to over promise.
All right, man, let's go to this with the Ravens, man. You're doing too much. You're trying to climb my table.
World champion, Washington. World champion, Baltimore Ravens. Ravens had a tough one against the Browns, but they pulled it out. I'm going to just say this. If I'm a Browns fan, I would have been furious on Sunday. Here's why.
Because they stole your team? They stole your Super
Bowl?
They
stole your team, and they stole your Super Bowl. Not only did they steal your Super Bowl, they hoisted it. They hoisted the banner.
Yeah, then you're right. I ain't think about that.
For that game. So if I were a Cleveland Browns fan, this would have been the one time where I wanted the Cleveland Browns to totally demolish the Baltimore Ravens.
That's right. I never thought about that.
It didn't happen.
So yeah.
I think about the things that others don't.
Yeah, that's actually intelligent. That's really a smart. That's a really smart observation.
They had an opportunity. I watched a little bit of the game.
It's a boring game. It was really boring.
It was.
Really boring. I tried to watch.
Ray Rice went out with a hip injury.
Yeah, that looks serious.
Did you hear about his tweet to fans on Twitter?
What did he say?
Fantasy football fans who were upset that he didn't come back in the game.
What did he tweet?
I don't know his exact tweet, but the gist of it was essentially. You know, this
F
is
off.
Real life.
Uh-huh.
F off. You know, my hip was hurting me. That's why I didn't come back in the game. I don't care about your fantasy football games.
It looks serious. I don't think anything about.
Ray Rice is a tough guy and a leader of that organization.
Yeah.
If he could have played, he would have played.
Yeah.
But he couldn't. But back to the game. You said you didn't see any of the game.
I watched the game. I mean, wrong. I did watch the game. It just bored the hell out of me.
Well, can you say that that was Ravens football?
Win, yeah, that's
Ravens. Tough defense and win with the running game.
No, that was Ravens football. I mean, that's Ravens football. They're blessed to have two good backs. They have Pierce. They have Ray Rice. Pierce is, could be a starter on many NFL teams.
And they also have the best fullback in the game.
Yeah.
Vontae Leach. He's a beast. He creates lanes.
Yeah. It just, again, it shows to you like how this team wins. They don't win by paying a quarterback X amount of money and think that he's going to be the face of the franchise. They win with that defense. seriously. I mean, let's be real. Over the last 2 weeks, it's proved, in my opinion, you giving a guy elite quarterback money. All right? You know what I mean? Your gauge, I know he won Super Bowl, but you're giving him elite quarterback money. Okay, granted, he had a hard time with the Broncos. That's cool. That was a tough game to win. Peyton Manning was dissecting that team. It was tough. And he did some good things. People dropped passes. But it's the Cleveland Browns at home, banner being raised. That's when you expect your quarterback to show up, because the theatrics of the game was just there for you to show people, like, all right, you're Joe Flacco. You're coming to your home. This is, you know, you're celebrating your world championship, and you only score 14 points.
You have a good point about that. Marlon Brown.
Yeah, he looking impressive, man.
Looks very impressive.
He's impressive.
Free agent out of Georgia.
Georgia, mm-hmm.
Wide receiver.
Rookie free agent. He's undrafted. Was he undrafted? Yeah,
undrafted.
Undrafted rookie.
Because
undrafted
of
rookie.
The injury that he had his senior year.
Yeah.
Could he potentially be that number one for this team?
It looks like it right now. It looks like he has a good rapport with Joe Flacco. He runs the routes. I think he has that Anquan Boldin-ish role for the team. Possession receiver. Obviously, Torrey Smith is going to always be the more electric wide receiver because he can beat you down the field with the deep play. But it looks like, to me, I like what Anquan Boldin is doing. I like what Anquan Boldin is doing, period, man. Marlon Brown, I like what he's doing. I think he's catching. He's doing all the tough catches. He got good size. And he has good hands. And it's like he runs good routes.
Yeah, he looks very impressive over these first two games. He has two touchdowns. Looks to be, like you said, filling that possession receiver role for Joe Flacco. Has that rapport with Joe Flacco. And he's a bigger wide receiver, which is something you can always need in today's NFL. So there's definitely, is the potential for, as the season goes on, for him to definitely step up his role with the team and become even bigger in the offense. Well, we're going to talk about the NFL overall now, because Wally only wanted to have two talking points about the world champion.
You have anything else you want to add? I mean, it wasn't like they were that exciting to talk about.
No, I don't.
I mean,
but I'm just making a point. I'm just showing that. The discrepancy between the Redskins and the Ravens.
This is Redskin country. I don't live in Baltimore. This is Redskin country. But I will give Raven fans something, because some of y'all made me cover the Ravens, so I will give you something. Instead, I'm not always badmouth you guys. I respect some elements of you. I respect Ray Rice. I like your defense. To be honest with you, I think what happened with Peyton Manning was something. They went against a great defense, a great offense, and a great quarterback, one of the best quarterbacks to ever play this game, and they got dissected. But I think this Ravens defense you see now, you saw against the Browns, is something that it's talented. It can do this to any team in the NFL, other than, like, obviously what Peyton Manning did to them. But still, you know, they're younger, they're faster. They held their own against the Browns. I think you'll see this also. Throughout the season, or with the majority of the games they playing, obviously you see the AFC North is weak. Cincinnati's probably the strongest team in that division. Pittsburgh is down. The Browns, you know, have been down for years.
to be honest with you, Pittsburgh has it's a possibility that Pittsburgh finishes with the worst record in that division.
It's a possibility, because the Browns, I mean, I like what I saw with Brandon Wheat in the preseason, but it's not. He's not doing the same right now, but I see your point. The Ravens, I think the Ravens defense will be okay. I think people Raven fans should be optimistic about what that defense can do this season.
Yeah, they should definitely be optimistic about what that defense can do and help them win that division. Because to me, quite frankly, the Bengals have talent, but the Bengals don't know how to win.
Yeah, that's true.
In my opinion.
It's been like that for a while, though. They've had the most talented in that division for the last couple of years.
Maybe the coach. We don't know.
It could be. Or maybe the quarterback. Maybe they have
you have a great point.
Maybe the quarterback.
Touche. Mm-hmm. But let's talk about this past week two in the NFL. Let's talk about it in general, broad strokes. Seattle Seahawks dominated the San Francisco 49ers Sunday night. Are they the favorites now to represent the NFC in the Super Bowl?
Just to go off of what we see, yeah, I guess so. In terms of everybody else, but let me give you my opinion. No, I won't give you like the consensus. Let me just be real. They're only good at home. They only blown teams out at home.
Let me ask you. You make a great point. You know, last year they went 8-0 at home, and I believe what were they 11-5 overall?
Yeah.
But okay, let me give you this perspective on it. Let's say this team finishes again 8-0 at home and goes on the road and wins 4 or 5 games. That makes you
on the road?
Yeah.
They improve their road record?
Yeah, let's say they can win 4 or 5 games. They win 5 games, that puts them at 13-3.
Got you.
And they have the home advantage all through the NFC playoffs.
They're the favorites. Easily. If they have home field advantage throughout the playoffs, they're the favorites. Hands down.
I agree with you. That 12th man is deafening. Because I actually had like the surround sound on when I was watching the game.
Yeah.
And it's deafening.
Yeah, I mean, just watching that team and just knowing what they can do at home, and especially as a Redskins fan, we went up there to Seattle, obviously not with the same team, but you know what I mean, like going to that stadium in the playoffs, it's really unsettling for the opposition. You can tell, and you can see it, how shook the opposition is when they enter that stadium and listen and hear that crowd, and the crowd noise is just crazy. Even looking for prime example, look what happened to the Saints a couple years ago. The Seahawks were under 500. Saints had a
11-5 record.
Yeah, and they got demolished.
Yeah, they got demolished.
Yeah, so I mean, this team, Pete Carroll has coached up a good environment, a good atmosphere for the team. They have a lot of energy, and that fits that stadium. So yeah, they're the favorites right now. But they're the favorites if they get home field advantage. But right now, I wouldn't say they're the favorites because I don't. There's the same team that's going to score 12 points against the Carolina Panthers on the road. And I just think that when they play a particular team on the road, you'll see a weakness. And I think if the Niners play them in Candlestick, the Niners will probably beat them in Candlestick. I even think they can lose to a team like the St. Louis Rams in St. Louis. They can lose to Arizona in Arizona. They're that kind of team to me.
You referenced something which I think is very important when you talk about the NFL. You didn't reference it directly, but kind of the narrative of the NFL changes from week to week. As of now, the Seattle Seahawks look like gangbusters. No one can beat them. But, you know, they look like a complete team. They're off to a great start. But, you know, one important thing you have to understand about the NFL, the narrative changes from week to week. So you never know who's going to get injured, how the play calling is going, the conditions of the game. So we'll just say for now, Seattle looks very strong. I think they're overall a very strong team. There's a possibility they can represent the NFC, but I'm not going to put it as a definite as of yet. So let's talk about the other games we saw over the weekend.
Okay. Some other games.
What caught your eye? Well, let me give you this.
Go ahead.
Give me 3 takeaways that you saw from the games around the NFL.
That's good.
3 things everyone needs to know.
Needs to know?
I think that's gonna be a new segment for us.
You wanna do that?
When we go around, when we talk about the NFL in general, the rest of the games, 3 things the fans need to know.
The Patriots don't look good, and they need Gronkowski in the worst way. That's one thing. The MCE sucks. And thirdly, I do agree with this, and it's been stated. I'm going to say the NFC West is the best division in football. All right. And one more. Phillip Rivers is back.
That's great. That's good. 3 things I think you need to know that I took 3 takeaways from. Let's say 3 takeaways from this from week 2.
All right.
My 3 takeaways are that the Kansas City Chiefs have a very viable chance to make the playoffs.
Oh, yeah, easily.
My second takeaway is that the Philadelphia Eagles, there's a defensive lineman free agent who's out there by the name of Richard Seymour. You may need to get that guy a call to help shore up that front 3.
Who?
Richard Seymour.
Now who should try to get him?
Philadelphia Eagles to help shore up. If you want to go to a 3-4, he's a guy who's kind of, you know, made his name in the league in New England when he was in that 3-4 defense. Then he went to Oakland, and they played a hybrid 3-4. So he's a guy, a veteran guy, you may need to give a call to shore up that front seven. And the third thing is, I actually think that Terrell Pryor is for real as a quarterback. I actually think that
Terrell Pryor
For real as a quarterback. You've seen progression from when he first came into the league. He's in the third year now. You know, there's a possibility that Oakland may be one of those teams that's vying for the first or second pick. And it definitely looks like the Jaguars are going to be the first pick through the first two games of the season.
Oh, real quick. You heard about the Jaguars fans trying to get Tim Tebow?
Yeah, I heard about it. It would be interesting for them. I don't see why they wouldn't. The guys won games. You don't have anything with Blaine Gabbert at this point. You've shown your ineffectiveness through the first two games to put points on the board. Why not just throw in Tebow and see what he could do for you? You know he's not your long-term answer. Mm-hmm. So you go with him for this year. You see how he pans out. You'll have one of the first two picks in the draft, so you can potentially get Teddy Bridgewater. Why not go with
him? Yeah, why worry about Tim Tebow? You get Teddy Bridgewater.
Yeah, but back to my point. Terrell Pryor looks like an NFL quarterback. He looks like a guy who can potentially sustain the Oakland Raiders offense. You know, even though they don't have, you know, for some reason they haven't been able to get on track. Even though they do have pieces, you know, kind of Derek McFadden. Darius Haywood Bay is gone. You have Denarius Moore, Jacoby Ford. He has
a dude named Street too, right?
Streeter. He does have some pieces. He looks very viable as an NFL quarterback for a lot of people that doubted him. I'll say keep up the good work, young man. Keep working hard.
Yeah. Terrell Pryor. And I like the mix for Oakland people. You know, I like what the potential they're going to do with the read option with him and Derek McFadden. It's dangerous.
It's dangerous. All right. Three things our listeners need to know going to week 3 the NFL.
This is out of the blue. All right. I got to prep myself for this one. They need to know. The game of – and it's also a game we're going to pick from, but you'll see Geno Smith outplay E.J. Manuel.
That's a good one.
You'll see that one. Shoot, this is a really good one. I haven't thought about the games out there that's out there for next week. St. Louis Rams will show you how strong the NFC West is when they play the Cowboys. And it's a big shout to Sam Bradford. I've been liking how he's been playing the regular season. And also, the Atlanta Falcons will pay with the injury of Sean Witherspoon. He'll be out till week 11 because he's on the injured reserve. So their defense is going to pay for not having him on that side of the ball.
All
right. Very underrated middle linebacker.
My three things that fans should know going into week 3. Number one, the Giants absolutely have no running game. David Wilson looks like he's scared ishless to carry the ball, and he's worried more about fumbling than actually hitting the hole and being a viable starting NFL running back. My number two, I think that the Kansas City defense will show everyone that they're for real when they play Philadelphia and kind of put the brakes on the offense and not allow them to put up video game numbers that they've put up over the first 2 weeks from a yards perspective. And number three, Calvin Johnson has the opportunity to catch 200 yards receiving against the Washington Redskins secondary.
I knew it.
So for me, those are my three things that everyone should know going into week 3. But let's get into some picks for this week, for week 3.
Real quick, you can't be throwing those shots and think it's over.
I'm just saying.
Let's get to these picks. And knowing I'm a diehard skin fan, you can't do that.
These are my three things that you should know.
And all of a sudden, I'm going to, like, not take that and be like, all right, one, I already told you I'm scared of Calvin Johnson. So I don't need you to reaffirm it by saying, like, reassure it.
These are my three things that I say.
Like, all right, he's going to get 200 yards. screw that. He can get 250 for all I care. All right, I'm already scared about it. I don't need you to add on to it.
These are my three things that I think our listeners should know going to week three.
And listeners, you know that Will is saying that Calvin's going to go ham on the Washington Redskins. Like, we don't know that. He's been going ham on us. We really want to break it down. He's been going ham on us since we've played him in the NFL.
Okay, well, I'll give you another one since that was my obvious.
Thank you, Will.
Houston versus Baltimore. I think that the Baltimore Ravens will hold Matt Schaub to under 225 yards passing.
He's been very unimpressive.
He's been very unimpressive, and to me, the window is kind of closing for that team to make a Super Bowl run. So I'm not going to say bench Matt Schaub at this point. I'm just saying you won't win a Super Bowl with Matt Schaub as your starting quarterback.
I dig it. Can you dig it? Let's go to these picks.
Let's make these week. Those are our me and Wally's three things you should know for week three. All right, let's get into our picks for week three NFL games.
All right.
Kansas City coming to Philadelphia on Thursday night.
I'm going to go with – damn, I want to choose Philly. What the game is in Kansas City?
And Philly.
It's in Philly? Yeah, I'm going to pick Philly. I know Andy Reid's coming home. I'm going to pick Philly. I think Michael Vick is on a whole different level right now. This is Michael Vick. It's the Michael Vick experience with Chip Kelly.
I'm going with Kansas City. I think that this team is fully brought in to Andy Reid, and I think that they want to win this game for Andy Reid really, really bad.
I believe so.
That's why I'm going to go with KC. Next, Buffalo versus the Jets.
I'm going to go with the Jets. I just think you'll get the best quarterback will play in this game. The Bills have been benefited by playing two of their games at home. The Jets have been on the road with the Patriots, and they won their home game against the Tampa Bay Bucks. They get another home game now. It's against the Buffalo Bills. I think the Bucks defense is, to me, better than the Buffalo Bills. So I think you'll see a good game by Geno Smith at home in front of a New York crowd.
Rookie quarterback versus Rex Ryan defense. I'm taking the Jets all day on this one.
Mm-hmm.
Houston versus Baltimore.
I'm going to go with Baltimore. I like what they did against Cleveland. Defense showed up. I think the defense will continue to ball out. Michael Huff out there in the back end. You got Darius Webb. Suggs looks like Suggs again. I'm going with that.
I agree with you. I'm going to go with Baltimore for the two following reasons. No Andre Johnson potentially because he's out with a concussion. And Arian Foster does not look like Arian Foster just yet because of the back problem. So I think that combination of those two things have me leaning towards Baltimore. And also, Matt Schaub doesn't particularly play well against the Baltimore Ravens defense on a consistent basis. So I'm going Baltimore. And our last game – did you have something else you want to say?
No, I'm with that. Like I said, I like the Baltimore. I like the Ravens defense. Peyton Manning didn't scare me from the Baltimore Ravens defense.
And last game, Green Bay versus Cincinnati. That's an interesting game to pick.
Why? Yeah, because you got Cincinnati's one of the most Cincinnati's one of the most talented teams in the NFL. Green Bay definitely had the best quarterback. Right. Well, no one said that. I think Peyton Manning's the best quarterback in the NFL. Had one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL, Aaron Rodgers. But Cincinnati's defense is stout, and his game is in Cincinnati. A good Cincinnati defense got a good back end in the secondary. You got Leon Hall. You got Pac-Man Jones, Terrence Newman. You got folks out there. I forgot the safety play. I'm actually having a moment right now. Can't think of the safety. Safety's okay, but that front seven is atrocious. But atrocious in a good way. I mean that nasty. No, like it's nasty. Geno Atkins.
Michael Johnson. Dunlap.
My middle linebacker. Birch. So they are stout, and I think that's a challenge. It'll be a challenge for Aaron Rodgers to do anything. And we really know the sack that the Green Bay Packers offensive line isn't as good. So it's a good defense, and Zimmerman's going to bring pressure. Just one
all
thing you
great
know.
Points. We're agreeing a lot on these last three games. I think the only thing we differed was KC and Philly, but I'm also going to go with Cincinnati for the last point that you brought up. Mike Zimmer is known to bring up exotic blitzes from that 4-3 defense. Green Bay's offensive line looks like Swiss cheese with a lot of holes in it.
Yeah.
For those reasons. Also, their defensive personnel matches up very well against Green Bay's personnel. And you won't be able to run the ball on this team, which means Aaron Rodgers will have to fling it around 40-45 times.
And to be honest with you, one thing I forgot to mention, you know, Pierre Garçon had a good game against them. God forbid what A.J. Green's going to do to you. A.J. Exactly. Green is the top 3-5. Maybe could be one in others. Well, not one. It's Calvin Johnson. But to 2-5 could arguably be the second best wide receiver in this game.
I totally agree with you. So for those reasons, I'm going to go with Cincinnati also. We're going to head out to commercial break. And when we come back, we're going to talk college football and wrap up the show.
Yeah, we've been talking about some Johnny Manziel. Is he really – is he an NFL quarterback? Urban Sports here on Eyes Radio.
For ages.
You dig?
Deuces.
My life is full of statistics. Thing is – I could have dropped out of school and become one myself, but I didn't, because I had people that believed in me. Here's another statistic. 7,000 students drop out every school day. That's one every 26 seconds. It's time that students know that we believe in them.
Inspire a student and share your message of support at boostup.org.
Shout out to Urban Sports Team and Wally and Will. Love y'all, appreciate y'all. Keep up the support. We'll keep the hits coming.
All right, if you're still listening, thanks for still listening to us. Last segment of the show, college football. We're going to talk about the great, almost becoming legendary, Johnny Football, Johnny Manziel. And then Texas A&M, they lost to Alabama, Roll Tide.
I think it's 49-42.
The score would make it seem like it was closer than it was, even though at a certain point Alabama was really
they were really in control for a long period of the game.
Yeah.
Texas A&M came back.
But Johnny Manziel, five touchdown performance, I believe two interceptions. Does this put him on the map as being the front runner for the leading Heisman candidate?
You know what? I would say, I don't want to say yes. I think there'll be some people that don't want that will not give it to him, just the way he won, the way he acted. I know a lot of people say because they won't. That's what the reason why he won't give it to freshman. But one, the way he's been acting, you know, and I think you have to hold yourself, you know, as a Heisman, you're supposed to hold yourself to a certain level. Usually, obviously, when you get the Heisman, you're gone the next year, you know, or something. You usually don't get that opportunity. Folks True. See their stock and they leave. But he was a freshman getting the Heisman, so it's totally different. I don't think he will be the front runner. I think somebody maybe like A.J. McCarron. They may get the Heisman over him because Alabama is probably going to undefeated again.
You stole my answer.
Oh, really? So yeah. I can see A.J. McCarron getting it. I don't think Bridgewater will get it because Bridgewater is playing a weak conference. And they're going to go against that because he's going to put up similar stats to – the only reason I would say he'll put up similar stats to Johnny Manziel within touchdowns and yards. But and since Manziel plays in the SEC, I think that's going to – that's going to propel him over Bridgewater. Even though Bridgewater means a better pro quarterback. But it's going to propel him over Manziel. I mean, Manziel's going to be put over Bridgewater because he's in the SEC.
All right. We're agreeing with each other a lot. That's really odd.
I know. It's terrible.
But,
we should bring Ray back. Ray always argues. Yeah. We can bring him. He never agrees with me.
I guess it's a light-skinned thing.
I know. Definitely.
It's a light-skinned thing.
Light-skinned people. But, I bet y'all don't even know. Never mind.
But, anyway, I agree with you. I think that this kind of – no one's kind of separated themselves from this thus far in the season. So I'll say that game kind of puts Johnny Manziel at 1A. Mm-hmm. One will be A.J. McCarron because of his performance during the game.
Yeah.
And also, if A.J. McCarron goes undefeated and Alabama goes to the national championship again,
mm-hmm.
he will definitely receive more votes for the Heisman Trophy.
Yeah.
As you stated, you know, Teddy Bridgewater he's not going to have a defining win this season, even though he's going to put up great stats for Louisville.
He won't have a defining game.
He won't have that defining game, which will kind of, and if you notice the voting in the Heisman, history of it, the Heisman winners always kind of had that defining moment or defining game. So, you know, if Johnny Manziel wins, then everyone will point to that pass he made during in the middle of the field where he kind of just heaved it.
Yeah.
And a wide receiver came up with it, I believe, on 3rd and 17 mm-hmm. this year in this past Alabama game. A.J. McCarron, people will just point to the consistent high level that he played at for a national championship.
Yeah.
And Teddy Bridgewater, people will point to nothing because yeah. he's not going to have a really one strong opponent to say they kind of separated themselves against the rest of his opposition for the year.
And then A.J. McCarron had a great game himself. I think he scored he threw for 4 touchdowns. I think he threw for like 339 yards or something like that. So A.J. McCarron had a signature game. He actually beat Manziel.
So that's going to be his signature game.
And
not to mention that they're going to play LSU this year.
Yeah.
So, you know.
He can build his resume bigger than – again, he can build his resume just like a Manziel. And to be honest with you, LSU last season strapped down Manziel. So let's just say A.J. McCarron plays good against LSU.
And Manziel also has to play against LSU this year.
Yeah, so say he plays better against him. So he's – has an opportunity to be the front runner in the Heisman.
I guess what we're saying is that this Heisman Trophy race is still wide open for, you know, you never know what guy can kind of throw his hat
into. And somebody else can come out kind of the blue.
Because if you think about it, just realistically, RG3 kind of didn't throw his hat into the Heisman race until after the second week of the season.
Yeah.
And we're heading into, I believe, week 3 of the college football season. So,
Geno Smith was leading for a while till
until he had that terrible stretch of terrible games. So,
well, I call the West Virginia stretch of terrible games. His stats are still okay.
Yeah, but speaking of quarterbacks, college quarterbacks, let's talk about who has the better pro prospect between Johnny Manziel and A.J. McCarron and Teddy Bridgewater.
That's easy. That's Teddy Bridgewater. Teddy Bridgewater can do a lot more. He's got the NFL body. To me, I mean, he has an arm. He has it all. He's accurate. Teddy Bridgewater is, to me, the guy that when you look at an NFL quarterback, he has it. A.J. McCarron maybe even second compared to Manziel.
Well, here's the thing.
Because Manziel, because people got to get that. They got to get the coach credit. Southern,
Kevin Sutherland.
His offense is awesome.
Yeah,
It's a good offense. Excuse me, and it benefits Manziel. Now I know we're still thinking about the spread and whatnot and what it's going to bring, but Manziel is fast and he's as a passer, he's okay. You know what I mean? And I don't get wrong. He still has some things he can work on. The difference between Manziel and you know some of these other guys that are successful in the and the spread offense, read option in the NFL, these guys are really good passers. Arthur was a great passer in Baylor.
Cam Newton
was an interesting passer in Auburn, but he had the physical build.
Colin Kaepernick was a good passer. Things that no one did at the NCAA level.
Yeah.
Throwing for I believe it was 10,000 yards.
Yeah, and also
rushing for 4,000.
And Russell Wilson. Have you ever seen Russell Wilson at NC State and in Western? He was an accurate passer
and just had a command of the team.
Exactly.
In the
so it's different. It's just different. This Manziel, do I think he'll be a good NFL quarterback? It's a possibility. I mean, I think he's a leader to a certain extent. He's an ignorant leader, but he's a leader to a certain extent.
Well, a couple things. We all know that Teddy Bridgewater is, you know, this.
Teddy Bridgewater's number one.
Yeah, Teddy Bridgewater is number one. It's actually this draft is kind of the Teddy Bridgewater sweepstakes.
It is.
To see which team would get, you know, depending on your need, either him or Jadeveon Clowney.
Yeah.
So we all know that. I'll say this when it comes to Johnny Manziel. I think more than ever his chances have increased.
Okay, from Alabama. Yeah.
Johnny Manziel, his chances have increased of being a good college quarterback. And here's why. Because so many
NFL quarterback
coming from college, because so many teams are adopting the principles of the spread
of
offense.
Of course.
And also of the zone read.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, those two things play into his favor. And also, but there are some drawbacks for him.
Yeah,
one, his small. Size.
Yeah, that's
he's that he won't be able to take a physical pounding.
Exactly.
Two, his off-the-field antics. Mm-hmm. NFL teams, they're going to be paying you a lot of money. And if they're going to make you the face of the franchise, they want to know that you'll be responsible, mm-hmm. that you will lead the organization, that you'll represent the organization and lead your teammates out on the field correctly. So I'm not saying – I definitely don't think Johnny Manziel will be a first-round draft pick,
mm-hmm.
maybe a third-round draft pick.
Gotcha.
And, you know, I heard two guys make – kind of interesting perspectives.
What's two guys?
Talking about Mel Kiper, and I also heard, if I'm not and kind of with Bill Parcells, his thought process on drafting quarterbacks from college into the NFL. Mel Kiper made the interesting point that Johnny Manziel won't be graded on the game tape. He'll be graded on what he does after the season, kind of in the evaluation process at the combine, workouts for teams, and things of those nature. And Bill Parcells, his thing was always
character,
and two, I don't judge guys on what they did in college. I want to know their physical attributes, and I want to know in the evaluation process, how do they perform? So two interesting perspectives on guys making the transition from college to the pros. We just know, you know, although Johnny Manziel, he'll have the Heisman on his resume and he'll throw for a lot of yards and run for a lot of yards, it's not what he's done in college. It'll be the evaluation from the end of from January through May. So
To me, what he, you know, what you're talking about, the read option and things of that sort, he's different from some of these guys. He's really small compared to those guys who run the read option. I know Russell Wilson's the one that you can refer to in terms of his size, but Russell Wilson has some girth to him, so he can take a hit. He has size to him. As a short guy, he has size to him. I don't think we ever see a guy this small run that offense. So it's going to be interesting to see. He is exciting, so that's he can sell.
And Johnny Manziel can't sell.
So if you're a team that just wants to bring some excitement to your organization, and that's what you want, that's your goal, there's nothing wrong with drafting him.
You're right.
And you're willing to change the offense, nothing wrong with drafting him.
All right, let's talk about the local, NCAA college football team, Maryland Terrapins, 3-0 with a good win against UConn. Is this team for real?
You know what? I mean, it's UConn.
It's a 3-0 start.
It's 3-1 start. But you know what? Same team lost to Temple last season. So,
great point.
So, I mean, in that regard, I can look at this team and say, yeah, they're for real enough. Go ahead.
I think a lot of people are complaining about Randy Edsall, but he may be finally starting to turn this program around.
Hey, man, that Diggs kid is a beast.
Yeah, got him off to a 3-0 start. They definitely have a test coming up this week against West Virginia. Mm-hmm. And then they also play Florida State.
That's what we're going to know they're for real. Obviously, West Virginia is a team that you could say they're not as strong as they were last season, but that's a game they can win, beat the West Virginia game. Like, okay, maybe he's going somewhere. But Florida State's the game.
Yeah,
and if they lose, it's not a lose-win type thing, because I think we all expect them to lose to Florida State. I think we can expect that. But if they're competitive against Florida State, then I'm definitely on the Maryland bandwagon and say, okay, this team is heading towards the right direction.
Yeah, I also believe they have Clemson towards the end of the season, if I'm not mistaken.
They're going to have them on the schedule because of the ACC.
They're
going to have them on ACC.
Yes, so.
They're going to have them all. They're going to have an opportunity to do something. But I'll be very impressed, though, if they can compete with Florida State, because the offense looks good right now. That's one thing that the Maryland offense had. I think they scored 32 points against UConn. I forgot the game the game before, and that was a big game, because you know UConn wanted to beat Maryland because of Edsall leaving UConn to come to Maryland. So I want to see, as a test, West Virginia. I want to see how they play against West Virginia. They lose against West Virginia, I don't have that much respect for Maryland. And if they lose, and if they are competitive, if they beat West Virginia and are competitive against Florida State, I think this fan base can really be excited about what Edsall is doing here for the University of Maryland.
Yeah, so it's an interesting week that's coming up for the Maryland Terrapins. You know, will they go 4-0 against West Virginia? How will they look? Are they, you know, maybe this West Virginia win is a win that kind of changes people's perception on the direction of the program.
Yeah, so, definitely.
You know, we'll see. You know, interesting week of pro and college football, and, you know, tied in with the Nets and the Baltimore Orioles. You know, chasing.
Orioles losing right now to the Boston Red Sox 1-0. The show is taped, so as we, you know, and it's what time is it now, Will?
About 8:00.
It's 8:00, so right now the Orioles are down 1-0, and it's 8:00.
So, you know, we'll just stick in. You know, we'll see how that game goes. Mm-hmm. But Just want to thank everybody for listening to the show, show number 156. We appreciate you all. You guys are the lifeline of this show. Part of the reason why we do the show is for y'all, just to get have a forum so we can, you know, fans, you know, because we're two sports fans, just want to shoot the shh and, you know, talk about sports. I'm getting better.
You're getting real good at it, man. All right, well, like Will said, man, we appreciate you all, man. You've done a lot for the show. I appreciate the hits we've been getting, the comments on various Facebook pages, and even chat rooms. So definitely I'm loving it, and I'm glad to be part of it. Glad to work with a great young, great individual like my man Will T. So it's been a blessing. And I hope you continue to listen to us.
All right, deuces.
Hey, Urban Sports Saint, Eyes Radio. Will said deuces. I'm about to say, you dig?
Sayonara, bitches!